We're reading from Bridge of Birds, a novel of an ancient China that never was, by Barry Hugart. Chapter 15, The Labyrinth. I was to see Lotus Cloud one more time before we faced the headman's axe. We were chained to a long line of condemned convicts and marched through the streets. And the mobs that had sung the praises of Lord Li of Cao and Lord Lu of Yu gathered around us once more to jeer and throw garbage. Lotus Cloud somehow made her way through the crowd. She slipped past the soldiers and ran up to me and tossed something that settled around my neck. I couldn't see what it was, and the jeers were so loud that I could only hear part of her message. "Once, when he was drunk, my miserable husband told me, 'Boopsie, I stole this, because if the Duke is playful—'" Soldiers were dragging her away. "'Follow the dragon,' Lotus Cloud yelled. 'You must follow the dragon.'" Then she was gone, and I had no idea what she was talking about. The soldiers lashed the mob out of the way, and we were marched up the hill to the castle of the Labyrinth. I was so terrified that I have no memory at all of approaching the castle. Gradually I became aware of the fact that we were crossing the great drawbridge and passing through immense steel gates, and we entered a courtyard that was vast enough to hold several thousand soldiers. The murderous iron bolts of countless crossbows pointed at us through slits in the massive walls, and above us smoke and flames were lifting from vats of boiling oil. The clash of weapons and the roar of harsh voices and the tramp of marching feet was deafening, and when we entered a maze of long stone tunnels, an infinity of echoes battered my ears. 10 times we reached checkpoints, where guards demanded secret signs and passwords, and then iron gates crashed open, and whips lashed us as we marched through. A dull gleam of light was ahead of us, and soldiers lined the walls, and I realized that we were approaching a door of solid gold. It swung silently open. The soldiers prodded us across an acre of polished lapis lazuli toward a huge golden throne, and I trembled with fear as I approached the Duke of Qin. The hideous mask of a snarling tiger loomed larger and larger, and the Duke was so big that the breadth of his shoulders matched the bulk of his mask. He wore gloves of gold mesh and a long cloak of feathers, and I saw with a shudder that the feathers at the bottom of the cloak were darkly stained. The chopping block and the basin that caught the heads and blood were almost directly at his feet, and apparently he enjoyed the view. Soldiers lined all four walls, and 2 rows of dignitaries flanked the throne. The executioner was a huge Mongol who was stripped to the waist, and his glittering axe was almost as big as he was. A bonze administered the last rites, and it seemed to me that the ceremony was proceeding with unseemly haste. The chain that linked the convicts together was unlocked, although our hands remained manacled behind us, and the first condemned man was shoved forward. The sergeant-at-arms bellowed the charge against him and the death sentence, and soldiers neatly kicked the poor fellow's feet out from under him, so that he fell with his neck outstretched across the chopping block. The bonds muttered the shortest prayer that I had ever heard, and the sergeant-at-arms asked if the victim had any last words. The condemned man began a desperate plea for mercy, which the bonds cut short by nodding to the executioners. The great axe lifted, and the vast room was hushed. There was a metallic blur and a dull thud, and blood spurted, and a head landed in the stone basin with a sickly wet splash. The dignitaries applauded politely, and the Duke of Chin uttered a little whinny of pleasure. To my amazement, Li Kao fainted, or so I thought, until I realized that he was using the opportunity to reach his left sandal. He slid half of the heel aside and came up with a couple of lockpicks, and then the swearing soldiers jerked him back to his feet. Li Kao managed to slip one of the tiny picks into my hands. "Ox, we can't possibly escape from here," he whispered. "I'm afraid that we can do nothing for the children of your village. But one of the Dukes of Chin killed my parents, and if you have no objection, we will try to slit this bastard's throat." I had no objection, but the lockpick was a bit too small, and it was very difficult to work with it while my hands were manacled behind my back. Again and again the great axe flashed through the air, and the applause of the dignitaries was nearly continuous, and the line of condemned men was steadily moving toward the throne. The Duke was laughing as the head splashed into the basin, and the soldiers joked with the sergeant-at-arms as they carried the carcasses away. Sometimes the legs were still twitching, and spurts of blood from the severed necks caused sticky red puddles to slide across the floor, joined by dark trickles from the overflowing basin. The feathers at the bottom of the Duke's robe were dripping with scarlet. Then only one prisoner stood between me and the axe. He was a middle-aged man, slim and slightly stooped, and he had been viewing the massacre with an air of ironic calm.
"Chin Sheng Tan, who dared to protest the peasant taxes imposed by the Duke of Chin? The sentence is death!"
roared the sergeant-at-arms. That must have taken incredible courage. I was later to learn that Chin Sheng Tan was one of the greatest writers and critics in the empire, and that his name meant Sigh of the Sage, because when he was born, a deep sigh was heard from the Temple of Confucius. His feet were kicked out from under him, his neck lay on the block, and the bonds mumbled a prayer, and the sergeant-at-arms asked if he had any last words. The ironic eyes lifted.
"Eat pickled turnips with yellow beans," he said politely. "It gives the taste of walnut."
I deeply regret that I never had the opportunity to know him. The axe flashed through the air, and the head of the man who had dared to protest an unfair tax joined the others in the basin. The soldiers shoved me forward.
"Lord Lu of Yu, who failed to pay his fine for disturbing the peace, the sentence is death!" roared the sergeant-at-arms.
My feet were kicked from under me, and my neck landed neatly upon the block. The ironic eyes of Sheng Tan looked up at me from the basin, and while the bonds mumbled a prayer, I tried to think of an exit line that would be worthy of his.
"Any last words?"
asked the sergeant-at-arms. I was only number 10 ox, so I lifted my head to the Duke of Chin.
"I hope I splatter blood all over you, you son of a sow!"
I yelled. Oddly enough, I felt much better, and I stopped gagging at the thick, sweet smell of blood. To my astonishment, the Duke lifted a hand and stopped the executioner. He beckoned, and soldiers lifted me and dragged me so close to the throne that my face was almost touching the tiger mask. Surely the great and powerful Duke of Chin could not be interested in number 10 ox. He wasn't. He was interested in whatever it was that Lotus Cloud had tossed around my neck. and the gold-meshed fingers of his right hand reached out and touched it. Then he leaned forward, and I felt the eyes behind the slits in the mask boring into mine, and with a sick sense of terror, I realized that he was looking right through my eyes into my brain. The voice that came through the mouthpiece was a voice of metal.
"So the wife of my assessor gave you this," the Duke whispered. "He shall be punished for his careless words."
I could feel his mind crawling over mine, probing and peering and searching.
"You do not know what it means," he whispered. "You know nothing of importance. I see a foolish abbot, and I see children whose deaths will serve to decrease the surplus population. And I see a ghost who dances with swords, and I see your antiquated companion dancing and singing songs. I can find no awareness of meaningful things, and although you seek the right ginseng root, you do so for the wrong reason." The terrible tiger mask lifted.
"Soldiers, continue with the execution," ordered the Duke of Jin.
My fingers had automatically continued to fumble with the pick, and suddenly I felt it turn in the lock.
"Master Li!"
I yelled, as I jerked my hands apart and lashed out at the soldiers with the manacles. His hands were already free, and he used the chain of his manacles to trip the executioner, who toppled toward me.
"Get him, ox!"
Master Li roared. I grabbed the axe and whirled to the throne and struck with all my might. And to my astonishment, that huge blade bounced off the flimsy cloak of feathers as though it had hit the strongest steel. My hands turned numb with the shock, and I swore and swung again. This time the Duke was not so lucky. The blade plunged right through his chest to his heart, and I turned to die like a gentleman at the hands of the soldiers. What I saw made me doubt my sanity. The soldiers were laughing. The dignitaries were laughing. The bonds was laughing. The executioner got to his feet and began laughing. I turned dazedly to the throne. There sat the Duke of Jin with a huge axe buried in his heart. He was laughing.
"Both the young fool and the old fool are fit for nothing more serious than bouncing balls and playing games. Very well, we will play a game," he chortled.
His fingers closed around an ornament on the arm of his throne. The soldiers next to us scrambled hastily away.
"You seek the great root of power. It can indeed be found. So find it."
The floor suddenly dropped out from under us. Down, 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 plunging head over heels into darkness. Just when I felt that I might fall forever, I landed with a shock in icy water, and I popped up to the surface and spat out a mouthful of brine.
"Master Li!"
I cried.
"Right behind you,"
he panted. Li Kao grabbed my belt. A light was flickering in the distance. The pool in which we had landed was about 50 feet in circumference, and I swam across and climbed up upon a flat rock ledge. The light was coming from a single torch. Li Kao lifted it from the brackets and swung it around. We were in a large cavern carved from black stone. The air was moist and heavy, and it reeked of something unpleasant. Ahead of us was an archway, and when Master Li lifted the torch, we saw that the first Duke's famous maxim had been chiseled in the stone above the curve of the arch. "Punishment produces force.
Force produces strength. Strength produces awe. Awe produces virtue. Thus, virtue has its origin in punishment.
We stepped through the archway and saw that an infinity of narrow tunnels branched out from the central path. We were walking upon human bones, and the reek came from decaying flesh, although I saw no recent bodies. I stared at shattered skulls and at thigh bones that had been snapped like bamboo twigs.
Master Lee, the thing that did this had to be stronger than 20 dragons, I whispered.
Oh, far stronger than that.
He reached out and touched his finger to the wall, and when he held it to my nose, I smelled seaweed. Then he lifted his torch high above his head, and when my eyes lifted with it, I saw the corpses that were causing the horrible smell. They were crammed into crevices in the stone ceiling. Half of a face looked down at me, and a dangling leg dripped blood.
The monster that stalks the labyrinth is simply the tide,
Master Lee said calmly,
and if the tide can get out of it, so can we.
Ox, was that some sort of trick axe, like the fake swords used in carnivals?
No, sir, I said firmly. That was a real axe, and it really entered the Duke's heart. He scratched his head thoughtfully.
Strange, he muttered.
If we get out of here alive, we most certainly must take another crack at killing him, purely in the interest of science.
Master Lee, the Duke can read minds, I whispered, trembling all over. He looked through my eyes, and I could feel his brain crawling over mine. It was wet and clammy, and it was like being nuzzled by cold, slimy lips.
Your powers of description are commendable, he said, but I could tell that he didn't believe a word of it. What was he so interested in?
I had almost forgotten it, but now I lifted the thing that Lotus Cloud had tossed around my neck. It was a silver chain with a large piece of coral at the end of it. The coral was a beautiful deep red, and a cleverly carved green jade dragon was winding through the holes. I wondered how the key rabbit had managed to acquire such a beautiful pendant, because it must be very expensive. I searched for some sort of a message that might be written on it, but there wasn't one.
Li Cao shrugged.
Well, at any rate, we've arrived in the labyrinth, which is what we intended all along. Getting out may be a bit of a problem, however, and I suggest that we start immediately.
He strode forward, ignoring the side tunnels. The main passageway led on and on through the dank, dripping rock, and finally I saw something gleam ahead of us. As we came closer, I saw that it was a huge copy of the tiger mask, perhaps 10 feet tall, and it was set into a wall that formed a dead end. The mouth gaped wide, and the glittering teeth were solid steel, and behind them was a black hole. Li Cao moved the torch over a curious network of metal baffles that surrounded the tiger's mouth.
Sound effects, he finally said. The tide, or part of it, pours through this hole and shoots through the baffles, and as the tide increases, the noise gets louder. I would imagine that it is the scream of a raging tiger, and we had better find another exit before we hear it.
He started back, studying the rock walls for smooth, worn surfaces that would indicate the passage of the water, and then he turned and darted into a side tunnel. The torchlight flickered over more bones, and the ceiling was so low that I had to duck not to strike my head against a corpse that was plastered above me in a crack. The reek of rotting flesh was indescribable. Li Cao turned into another low tunnel, and then another, and we twisted and turned until I had lost all sense of direction. He strode confidently ahead, however, following minute signs that indicated water rushing toward an exit. And finally he grunted in satisfaction. The low tunnel was widening and rising, and ahead of us loomed a large black archway. Master Lee trotted through it and stopped dead in his tracks. And I stared in horror at a large cavern and a pool of water that was about 50 feet in circumference. In the ceiling high above that pool was the trapdoor that led to the throne room of the Duke of Chin. We were right back where we had started, and the hair lifted upon my head as I heard a faint snarling growl in the darkness behind us. Slim, dark shapes were sliding across the stone floor like snakes. It was water, and the tide was coming in. Li Kao stood quite still, with his forehead wrinkled in thought. "Ox, what did Lotus Cloud say to you when she gave you that dragon pendant?" he asked quietly. I repeated the fragmentary words that I had heard, and they still didn't make any sense to me. The water was rising with terrible swiftness, lapping my ankles, and the tiger at the end of the tunnel was beginning to roar. "The Duke of Chin lives only for money," Master Li said slowly, thinking out loud. "He piles the stuff in treasure troves, and who, beside the Duke, must have access to them? The man who has to collect the loot and count it, that's who. And Lotus Cloud happens to be married to him. Apparently, he made an indiscreet remark about the pendant, and it might explain why the Key Rabbit was allowed to keep something so valuable. Ox, bend over." I bent over, and he climbed upon my back. With one hand he held the torch, and with the other he lifted the dragon pendant. "Lotus Cloud said that if the Duke was playful, you should follow the dragon. And when the Duke dropped us into his labyrinth, he said that we would play a game. Since we have no other hope, we will assume that the Key Rabbit indiscreetly told his wife that the locket enabled him to get to the Duke's treasure troves." He held the torch close. "The dragon skips the first two holes in the coral and winds through the third hole on the left," Master Li said grimly. "Start through the archway, take the third tunnel to the left, and run like hell." I ran as fast as I could, but the water was almost up to my knees. I darted into the third tunnel on the left, and Li Kao held the flickering torch close to the pendant. "Take the second tunnel on the right," he yelled. The tide was rushing in so swiftly that shattered bones were flying across the boiling surface, and the tiger was roaring so loudly that I could barely hear Master Li. "Third left, first right, second right, fourth left." The tiger was screaming in lunatic rage. The water was rising over my chest as I squeezed through another narrow opening, and then I collided with a blank wall. "Master Li, we must have made a wrong turn," I shouted. I tried to turn and go back, but it was hopeless. Water had reached my chin, and the tide shoved like a giant hand and plastered me against the wall. Flying bones were smashing around my head, and one of them knocked the torch from Li Kao's hand. Now we were in total darkness, and the boiling water lifted over my mouth. Li Kao's fingers found what his eyes had not. "Ox, the dragon goes straight up," he yelled in my ear. "Don't fight the tide. Let it carry you to the ceiling." The tide scraped me against the wall as I lifted with it, and Li Kao's hands reached high and groped for an opening. He found it. A narrow chimney wound up from the ceiling through solid rock, and I barely managed to squeeze into it. I braced my feet against the sides and started to climb, but the tide was climbing faster than I was, boiling up over my head while my shoulders tried to wriggle through narrow openings and my lungs were bursting.
I had nearly lost consciousness when the tide reached its peak and my head broke through the water. I gulped air and climbed, and it seemed that hours had passed when the first faint light appeared in the pitch blackness. A small glowing circle appeared high above us, and I used the last of my strength to reach it and to climb over the edge of the opening to the floor of a small cave. The sun had set, and the light came from the rising moon. A small opening looked out over the sea, and as the moon lifted higher, its pale rays reached farther and farther back into the blackness of the cave, and something began to glitter.
"Great Buddha! How Lotus Cloud would love this place!" I yelled.
She would not have been interested in the gold, or the diamonds, and emeralds and rubies that were heaped in mounds, but most of all there were pearls and jade. Tons of them, and I do mean tons. As the moon lifted even higher, and the whole incredible mass of loot appeared, I decided that no single duke could possibly have piled up so much wealth. This had to be the collective effort of all the Dukes of Chin, right back to the first one, and they had not been snobbish when it came to money. Cheap copper coins rubbed cheeks with gold, and semi-precious stones were piled with the choicest gems. A broken wooden doll was gazing with tiny turquoise eyes at a scepter that would have bankrupted most kingdoms. And beside a huge jeweled crown was a set of false teeth carved in ivory. Li Kao was gazing at that incredible monument to greed with narrowed eyes, and he reached out and squeezed my shoulder.
"I would hate to think how many corpses this stuff cost, and I rather believe that one of them wants to say something about it," he whispered.
I followed the direction of his eyes, and finally I saw it. At the top of the pile was a shadow where no shadow should be. Li Kao continued to hold my shoulder.
"Ox, don't move so much as an inch until we see what lies behind the ghost shadow. It may be a very important warning," he whispered.
I tried to calm the beating of my heart. I closed my mind to everything except a nice, warm, comfortable blanket. And then I reached out gently with my mind and drew it over my head. What happened then was very strange. I was gazing at a girl who had almost certainly been murdered because blood stained her dress where a blade had pierced her heart. Her clothes were in the style of 1,000 years ago, and I sensed with every nerve in my body that she was making a terrible effort to appear before us. Her gaze was beseeching, and when she parted her lips, I felt a hot, searing wave of agony.
"Take pity upon a faithless handmaiden," she whispered. "Is not 1,000 years enough?"
Two transparent ghost tears slid slowly down her cheeks.
"I swear that I did not know what I had done. Oh, take pity and exchange this for the feather," she sobbed. "The birds must fly."
And then she was gone. Li Kao relaxed his grip on my shoulder. I could not possibly have heard correctly, and I sat up and tilted my head and pounded water from my left ear.
"Exchange something for a feather?" "Oddly enough, I heard the same thing," said Master Li. "Also something about birds that must fly, which doesn't make much sense unless she was referring to travelers' tall tales about flightless birds, such as penguins and ostriches and other mythological beasts." I think that she was cupping something in her hands, I said. I climbed to the top of the pile, slipping and sliding over sapphires, and slid back down with a tiny jade casket in my hands. Li Kao took it and turned it this way and that in the moonlight. And when he opened the lid, I cried out in joy. A powerful fragrance of ginseng reached my nostrils. But Li Kao's exclamation was not joyful. He tilted the casket, and two tiny tendrils, with rather familiar shapes, fell into the palm of his hand. Legs bent at the knees, he sighed. According to Henpecked Ho, these would be the legs of power, and we must pray they will be strong enough to carry the children to safety. I assume that the Duke broke up the Great Root, and that pieces are hidden in treasure troves all over China. He turned the casket upside down, and one other object fell into his hand. It was a miniature tin flute, not much bigger than a thumbnail. What did she want us to exchange for a feather? The root or the flute? I asked. How would I know? Ox, did the Duke of Qin really read your mind? Yes, sir, I said firmly. I don't like this at all, Master Li said thoughtfully. He stared at the place where the ghost had been. Nearly a minute passed in silence. Perhaps we'll figure it out in 200 or 300 years, he finally said. Let's get out of here. It was easier said than done. It would be suicide to go back into the labyrinth, and the only other exit was the small mouth of the cave. We stood there and gazed down 100 feet of sheer cliff that could not possibly be negotiated without ropes and grappling hooks and an angry sea where waves smashed against jagged rocks that lifted through the foam like teeth. There was one small, calm pool almost directly beneath us, but for all I knew it was 6 inches deep. The moon was reflected in it, and I gazed from the moon to Master Li and back again. My life has been rather hectic, and I could use a long rest, he sighed. When I get to hell to be judged, I intend to ask the Yama Kings to let me be reborn as a three-toed sloth. Do you have any preference? I thought about it. Cloud, I said shyly. He was wearing a smuggler's belt that was studded with fake seashells, and he snapped one of them open and put the legs of power inside. On second thought, he took the tiny flute as well, and I filled my pockets with pearls and jade on the odd chance that I might live long enough to give them to Lotus Cloud. Li Kao climbed up upon my back and wrapped his arms around my neck, and I discovered that I was beginning to feel undressed unless I wore my ancient sage like a raincoat. I perched on the edge and took aim. Farewell, Sloth. Farewell, Cloud. I held my nose and jumped. The wind whistled around our ears as we plunged toward the pool and toward a jagged rock that we hadn't noticed. Left, left, Master Li yelled, pulling on my pendant chain like the reins of a bridle. I frantically flapped my arms like a large, awkward bird, and the reflected moon grew larger and larger, and then so huge that I almost expected to see Chang O and the White Rabbit stick their heads out and shake their fists at us. We missed the rock by 6 inches. The moon appeared to smile, and the warm waters of the Yellow Sea opened to embrace us like long-lost friends.